You know, historically speaking, it's pretty likely that a given football team will lose a football game over the course of a season. And historically speaking, it's actually pretty likely that the Kansas City Chiefs will lose to the Buffalo Bills in the regular season, even as of late. Yeah, it's just a loss. One loss was always going to happen. If I have to say right now, I'll say this. I bet the Chiefs probably don't finish this year 16-1. I never thought they were going to go 17-0. But we also saw what happens when the Chiefs' flaws are tested by a top-level team who wants a game with playoff levels of intensity. That's what we're going to talk about over the course of the next 2 hours with you here tonight on The Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. I am, in fact, Joshua Briscoe, James Howell producing the effort on the other side of the glass. And the Chiefs, I'm sorry if I'm the one to break the news to you. The Chiefs are no longer perfect. Now, I would argue that the Chiefs were never perfect, but their record was. I don't think anyone actually thought they were perfect. It's kind of the dichotomy of being a Chiefs fan or analyst or host or writer or whatever. Anyone observing the Chiefs has figured out something over these last several years that you should be grateful for. The standard is different for them than it is for anybody else. 9 times out of 10, I think that's a good thing you should be happy about. This team's standards are so high because, Google to make sure, a little fact check, they've won the last 2 Super Bowls consecutively. They've won 3 in this era. We haven't seen them fail to make an AFC Championship game under Patrick Mahomes. And so the real standards don't get set for this team until January. And every conversation, good or bad, win or loss, ultimately gets put back in that same kaleidoscope where the thing in front of you is never really what you're seeing. You're trying to make the most out of an abstract concept. How is this going to affect this team when the games actually matter? And I think against Buffalo yesterday, we saw that on a variety of levels, both good and bad. The one time out of the 9 times out of 10, just for what it's worth, the 9 times out of 10, it's because the standards are high, and that means your standards stay high. And so maybe you're a little bit annoyed by how, you know, how much vitriol there is in an early season conversation about Kadarius Toney and Sky Moore. But last year came and went, and those were not good answers to who is your number one wide receiver. These things happen, and we talk about them. That's what we're here for. The annoying thing is that when your standards are Super Bowl and you lose a football game in November, that some people, national analysts, or frankly, Chiefs fans on social media all too frequently react as if the season has just ended. And really, not to start really lowering the standards, because I don't think that's necessary. But if the Chiefs lose to the Bills in the AFC Championship game this year, it would be really disappointing after all the three-peat talk, and I still think there's a really, really good chance we're going to get to see a three-peat. But if they fall just short of historically unprecedented, never-achieved standards, I think we should all probably figure out how to pass the next few months until the draft. I think it's an okay time to look back on how incredible this unquestioned dynasty has already been. And so I say all that at the front end here because a lot of the specifics in tonight's show are going to be at least vaguely negative in terms of the things that went wrong that let the Buffalo Bills win that football game yesterday. And I promise, that's what's happening in film rooms at Arrowhead too. You have to identify what went wrong so you can begin to figure out how to fix it. And for the Chiefs, they still have a good little bit of time. Now, I am still frustrated they lost that game yesterday because the Bills did successfully win both sides of the ball. I don't necessarily buy this idea that the Bills are a fundamentally better football team. I think you've got two great quarterbacks, and I didn't necessarily always believe this about Sean McDermott, but I think you've got two really good coaching staffs, generally maximizing the players they've got. And yesterday, you had two teams that were missing important pass catchers. Both of them. Both having issues at other important spots. Right tackle for Buffalo. The Chiefs are still, clearly, as we'll get to in the negatives, missing Jalen Watson in an enormous way. But I think right now, if you made me tell you who I think is going to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl in February, I would tell you I would bet on the Kansas City Chiefs. I think the Bills are next. I think they're a really good football team. I don't think there's anything fluky about what we saw yesterday, but I think the margins are close enough that my opinion on the Chiefs hasn't changed a whole lot. There are two specific position groups that we're going to spend some real time on today, one of which I'm beginning to get frustrated at the Chiefs for, which might be unfair, but is what is happening. And the other is just a bummer, and I'm ready to start looking for solutions. But by and large, this is the same football team it was on Saturday. It's a really good football team with plenty of flaws, quarterbacked by Patrick Mahomes. Their ceiling and their floor are both as high as anybody in football. The Bills, though, have, I think, just about as high of a ceiling and just about as high of a floor. Even, it's not totally fair, just the team they played last, because Bo Nix just had a great game and the Broncos are probably a playoff team right now. But you didn't expect the Broncos or even the Buccaneers without their top two wide receivers or the Raiders, even the banged up Niners, but that was closer. You didn't expect many of these recent teams to exploit the biggest weakness the Chiefs had, and the biggest issue is going back all the way to that Niners week. But what we did see, and again, I'll get more specific. I don't mean to be vague. I'm just trying to get more responsible with the clocks around here so I can tell you the big picture, and then we'll narrow into the specifics as we go. We've been talking about the little cracks in the dam, if you will, all season, in the preseason, in training camp, before training camp, during the draft. We've known where the question marks were, and no team is ever flawless, and so many of those question marks have come home to roost in unfortunate ways. But I don't know if we've seen those cracks burst open into floodgates quite like we did yesterday. It's going to be a tough week of film review for Nazi Johnson. Yeah, I know he had a pick. I think it's probably going to be a tough week in the film room for Shamari Connor. Their roles are different, but there's a really important way that they're being used. It's probably going to be a tough week of practice for Joe Cullen's defensive line. I can't imagine that he was thrilled with the way that the front four, whoever they were as they rotated through, although it was mostly four guys, I can't imagine that Joe Cullen is thrilled with the way that they tried to affect Josh Allen. I'm not even saying pressure or sack or hit. I couldn't tell at times when they're rushing four if the goal was to contain Josh Allen or to go get him and bring him down, but far too often, neither happened. I don't think the Chiefs are in any danger at all against Carolina next week. I don't think they're in any danger the week after with the Raiders again. Although, you know, weird things happen. But I did watch the Steelers and Ravens game before Chiefs-Bills yesterday. I'm worried about Christmas. Scan for Grinches. Scan for Grinches on Christmas Eve. Put out cookies and milk for Santa. Do not put any out where Mike Tomlin can find them. He will take your cookies. TJ Watt will take your cookies. I'm just nervous about that already. And I think I have to imagine that even as Chiefs Kingdom as a whole has had their skin thickened over these recent years, it's not so easy to make us bleed anymore, right? For a very long time, like a mention of a certain kicker's name or the simple concept of a game with no punts was enough to make you start gushing blood. I get it. These are bad times. For me, my, like, perhaps biggest heartbreak was that for some reason I really bought into the wild card Chiefs-Ravens game. I think Dwayne Poe didn't catch a pass. I'm sure I was sitting there watching it in my Dwayne Poe jersey, cursing God for allowing me to be born in the general Kansas City area. I was born in Wichita. I could have gone into what, the Cowboys? It would not have been better. We were in Kansas City by that time, and I love Dwayne Poe. I think Dwayne Poe could have probably put up... Dwayne Poe could put up 3 for 30 against Carolina next week. Right now. I believe this. But everybody has their own, you know, Chiefs trauma that now you look back on with some pride, because those are the thin days. Those are the dark days. You made it through. You're a better person for it. Now you're here watching Super Bowl. That's awesome. I do imagine that with the way that last year went, and with yesterday now in the brief rear view, I imagine a lot of Chiefs fans are looking ahead to Christmas and just kind of considering, like, maybe we have another plan for the late afternoon, early evening. Let's definitely get all these presents open beforehand, and I don't know, we got a double glass of eggnog. It's just weird. I don't think the Steelers are a holistically better football team than the Chiefs are. It's just a bad matchup, and it's a weird vibe, and I'm just worried about it a month in advance. I have not done almost any Christmas shopping, and I'm already worried about Chiefs Steelers on Christmas. That's a me problem. That's a prioritization problem. I digress. I want to take our break here and come back and start not even with Nazi Johnson's extremely bad day at the office, and not just with the way that the cornerback group has struggled after Jalen Watson. We will get to that. But I want to talk about the defensive ends and the defensive line in general, the issues the Chiefs had yesterday, the issues that I think at this point they're probably going to have going forward, plus a little bit of a promise or even just an offer for hope. It's not in a great place right now. I think it could get better, but it needs to get better very fast. We'll talk about that next in the Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to the Josh Briscoe Show, Monday night starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. James Howell pushing the buttons on the other side of the glass. I neglected to mention tonight's guest, our first repeat guest here on the Josh Briscoe Show, Matt Verderam of Sports Illustrated, SI.com, that football show on KC Sports Network, the Matt Verderam Show. He's a busy fella, all right? He's a busy man, and he's making some time for us again tonight. One of my favorite guys to talk football with. Certainly we'll do a lot of Chiefs Bills, and maybe look at the rest of the NFL slate a little bit. Good day of football yesterday, tainted by this one result. Let's talk about the one thing that really stuck out to me, and every week, usually the day immediately after the game, I will go through all the snap counts that, you know, come out after, and I write a recurring thing over on chiefsonsi.com. That's the website, Chiefs on SI. It's my main day job, and something that has given me lots of excuses to dig into some nitty gritty here and there and try to find the details to make a little bit of lemonade. And the thing that jumped out to me, well, actually, you know what? Dusty broke this news to me this morning because I hadn't even gotten to my snap count story yet. So I was obviously on with Fesco and Dusty this morning. And I said, you know, we were talking about the pass rush, which is where I'm headed here now in the defensive end. And I said, you know what, I haven't even seen the snap counts yet, but I think I saw Joshua Uche out there a few times, but I don't remember exactly what, and I don't know what a snap count was. And Dusty said, Joshua Uche had 5 defensive snaps. Oh, well, that's even less than I assumed. That appears to be going in the wrong direction here. We'll get to more on Uche in particular in a second, but if you were frustrated in real time, your eyes did not deceive you, because this was not a productive pass rushing unit. Chris Jones was fine. It wasn't like his most dominant performance, but he generally got double teamed a lot. It won some one-on-ones. He had some one-on-ones where he won his battle but couldn't bring down or get to Josh Allen. That's understandable given who Josh Allen is, but also it's who Chris Jones is. You want to see him make some of those plays. It's probably not his favorite game of the season for himself, but it certainly wasn't Chris Jones's fault. It did become Chris Jones's problem, as it became a problem for the entire defense. I'm starting with the defensive ends here over the corner, partially for some stats I'm about to read to you, and also partially because of the relationship between the two. When the Chiefs made one last move ahead of the trade deadline, by all reporting and everything, they were interested in Marshon Lattimore and sniffing around there, but the price got too high for that to make sense. So instead, they go get Joshua Uche from the New England Patriots. Their options for trying to improve the defense is either the pass rush or pass coverage. They went pass rush there. I understand why they did that, both by cost and by what they saw from Uche and what they have on hand already. If your pass rush is better, your corner's jobs get a lot easier. And yesterday, neither side helped the other. The Chiefs did not have a coverage sack where the secondary was so good that it gave the defensive line an extra beat or two to get the Josh Allen, and the defensive line did not win fast enough to give the secondary a whole lot of easy downs when the Chiefs only rushed four. So that's the problem. They could not pressure Josh Allen consistently when they rushed four, and even when they did, well, here's what I'll say. So George Karloftis gets 85% of the defensive snaps, 63 out of 67, 85%. Mike Dana gets 62% of the snaps, large majority for your two starters there. Now, the first thing I'll say about Karloftis and Dana is, one, they're your starters at this point, and I'm not mad about either of them starting, certainly. But I have to think, with the type of players they are and the type of player that Josh Allen is, maybe the idea to some extent was crush the pocket and try to do a little bit of containing of Josh Allen, make him stay in the pocket and deal. Even that's a little fraught for me because this is not Josh Allen of a couple of years ago, or maybe, I don't know, 3 years ago, however far back you need to go, to find a guy that could get bored in the pocket and then do something crazy. 2024 Josh Allen is not that guy. 2024 Josh Allen will sit in the pocket and dissect you if necessary, and then when he has a rush lane, he'll take it, and it's like trying to tackle a donkey in full sprint, I imagine. It seems impossible. Like trying to tackle a moose. But a moose with a great arm who's seeing everything perfectly from opposing defenses. It wasn't a perfect game for Spags either, but we'll get to some of that too. But so you've got Chris Jones and Tershawn Wharton get the lion's share of the work in the middle. Karloftis and Dana, that is, on the edges. That's your typical front four. That's a powerful group. That's a pocket-crushing group. No speed rushers to be found there. Chris Jones certainly can win the fastest out of that crew. A rarity for a defensive tackle, obviously. But even when they were just sort of holding their ground, it wasn't affecting Allen. And when they were able to hold up long enough in the secondary for Allen to choose to run instead of throw the ball, he didn't get held in that pocket. The crushing didn't really work. Lanes were there. The rush lane discipline was not great. It's a problem all throughout. I want to talk about every other defensive end, though, who suited up for this game, and one who didn't, actually. Texter says tackling a buffalo. Yeah, good point. Probably could have just taken that. Instead of going from horse to donkey to mule to moose. Yeah. Like trying to tackle a bison. Do you know that the American bison is really what the Bills' mascot is, as opposed to a buffalo, which is actually like a water buffalo? Do you know we have white bison? I'm not talking about Josh Allen. Thank you, James. Here's what's going on with the rest of the defensive ends, okay? The third most used Chiefs defensive end yesterday was Felix Anudike Uzomah. Good for him. Getting a little larger workload, trusting him more on first and second downs. What did he get? 15 snaps? 12. Malik Herring got 11 snaps. Joshua Uche got 5. Of Chiefs defenders who saw the field yesterday, who took a single defensive snap, none played fewer snaps than Anudike Uzomah, Herring, and Uche. Those are your bottom three guys on your snap count. They were right there neck and neck, or Felix at least, was there neck and neck with Derek Nnadi and Jaden Hicks. That's a run-stuffing defensive tackle who's gotten kind of phased out through parts of this year, and a rookie safety who's not gotten a lot of work but is phasing further into the workload, it seems. Again, I don't mind George Karlaftis playing a ton of snaps. He's a water polo animal, a white bison even. But I'm afraid that we saw his most productive season last year. I don't think he's like a worse player right now, but the hope was fringe double-digit sack guy, and maybe there's a chance for him to even take another jump and to be a perennial 12 to 14 sack guy, like, you know, where you're getting to the optimistic side of it all. He's been fine. The other element of this is that Cameron Thomas, who the Chiefs traded for during roster cutdowns with the Arizona Cardinals for this year's 7th round pick, he's only been active when Dan has been hurt. He's barely played when he's been active. My issue here isn't that the Chiefs have neglected the position. They have invested in the position quite a bit at defensive end. I would argue they've invested too much at defensive end for it to be as nondescript as it is right now. Karlaftis is a 2022 first round pick. Again, not the problem. He's just the first guy up, and you don't really want him to be your first guy up at edge. He would be a great secondary edge player with a speed rush winner opposite him. Mike Dana re-signed this offseason on a contract that's basically a two-year, $15 million deal. FAU is a 2023 first-rounder. Chiefs gave up a 2026 sixth for Uche. Not an exorbitant price, but it's a half-season rental. He's played 25 snaps in three games. He has not pressured the quarterback yet. Cam Thomas, again, not a big spend there, 25 seventh-round pick. He's been a healthy scratch 6 out of 10 games. He's played a grand total of 6 defensive snaps. The Chiefs have tried. 2 first-round picks, the return of a reliable vet, 2 change-of-scenery trade acquisitions, Malik Herring being kind of a third-round, or third-year organizational depth piece who's had some good reps. I really like Charles Omenihu. I think he's actually kind of gotten underrated throughout his time here, and obviously that's multifaceted for a lot of reasons. Suspended for the first half, or approximately the first half of his first season here, and then he tears his ACL in January. He has an $11 million cap hit this year, and he has not seen the field. That's not his fault or the Chiefs' fault. I'm cool with the deal they gave him. Just deeply unfortunate, and deeply unfortunate timing. Right now, I think Charles Omenihu is probably the Chiefs' best bet for an extra shot of energy in this position group, but you're asking a 27-year-old less than a year removed from a significant knee injury and surgery to come in and be that extra little jolt of lightning. It's not an ideal spot to find yourself in at a unit that's lacking, frankly, juice. See a text here. Are you guys aware of the significance of a white bison in the Lakota tribe prophecy? A white buffalo was born recently in the Lakota tribe region, so they say. I didn't know that. I'm not familiar with that. My wife and I took a trip out to see my grandma on the dual, like, Southwestern trip this summer, and so we took a train to Santa Fe. Actually, we had a couple places. We went through New Mexico and then got up into Arizona, did the Grand Canyon and all of that. Could not recommend it highly enough. I love the American Southwest. I'm biased because my grandparents on my mom's side moved out there when I was really young, pretty young. And so we would go out to Arizona a lot. So that's why I'm a Phoenix Suns fan, for better and for worse. And on our trip this summer, we went to a place called Barrizona. Everybody, this is the nonsense portion of the show. It's okay. You should have been warned that this could happen. And we'll come back and talk about the corners. We went to this place called Barrizona. It's this big, like, wildlife, I think it's rescues they've found, and then having this, you know, these big open spaces that are still contained a little bit. And Renee and I spent so long there. I think the, like, tour guide sort of thing she'd looked at online was like, people usually spend 2 to 3 hours here. We were there the entire day. It was like from when it opened to when it was about to close. And so the connection of this is that at Barrizona, there's bears, shockingly, all sorts of wolves and other critters. There's a walkable area that's sort of like a zoo. And then there's a drivable area where you'll see the bears and the wolves and the bison. I don't think I knew that white bison existed before that moment, before we pulled up and saw a sign that's like white bison. It's like, I don't know. I just thought it was like a shiny Pokemon. It was like one in every 1,000, maybe. Like if you said there are albino bison, I would be like, oh, that makes sense, I guess. I don't really know. James, do you know that white bison existed?
at the risk of sounding incredibly unintelligent.
That's what we do here, baby.
No, I didn't. I did not.
It makes me feel better. I don't think I knew either.
Yeah, I was not aware that white bison or white buffalo, for that matter, were even a thing.
I was unaware. They're like their own thing. And it was just majestic. I don't know how close your average folk has been up to a bison at some point. Those suckers are large.
those are some gigantic
beasts. So I tried to tackle one and I, anyway, that's how I met Josh Allen.
You're listening to The Josh Briscoe Show, Monday night starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
Hey, it's Rex here with RexBuysKC.com, your local KC home buyer. If you own a property in the Kansas City or surrounding area and want to sell it fast and at a fair price, write this number down, 816-330-6000. I'm a private real estate investor, not some hedge fund or large national chain. My family and I live right here in KC. I can pay cash and close on your timeline, even in as little as 3 days. Here at RexBuysKC.com, we are improving Kansas City one house at a time. I buy inherited houses, vacant houses, foreclosure houses, behind-in-payment houses, my tenant won't pay the rent houses, and properties that need complete rehabs. Do you own a house that's trashed and needs thousands of dollars in repairs? Great. If you own a house and want to sell it fast, call me at this number, 816-330-6000. That's 816-330-6000, or go to RexBuysKC.com. That's RexBuysKC.com, and I look forward to working with you.
Diamonds Direct's biggest and most spectacular sale of the year is starting now. For the first time, it's bigger than ever. Take 20% off virtually everything. Rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, everything to make this holiday sparkle. This weekend, we're decking the halls with an expanded selection and top designers' appearances in the store. 20% off now through Sunday. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. Open all weekend. For the best selection, quality, and price, shop direct. Get details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Are you playing Roofer Roulette? That's when you bet your roof and your home on the first random roofer to ring your doorbell. Why do that when JR & Company offers a free hail and wind report online at JRStormCheck.com?
Something big is happening at Hy-Vee. We've just lowered thousands and thousands of prices on thousands and thousands of items in every aisle and in every department. Online, too. And on many of your favorite products, we've even matched prices with some of the biggest discount stores in the country. Because we get it, times are still tough. So we'll continue to work hard to bring you new, lower prices on thousands of items. Things are looking different at Hy-Vee. Come see for yourself.
We're talking with Dr. David Bach, board-certified urologist at Kansas City Urology Care. What's the most important thing men should know about prostate cancer?
I would strongly recommend PSA testing. It's a simple blood test. It's inexpensive. And basically, every male over 50 should be having this PSA once a year. Prostate cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men.
And why should they go to KCUC?
We not only treat more prostate cancer than anyone else in this part of the country, we also start with cutting-edge diagnostics who offer the most precise diagnoses of prostate cancer using ultrasounds and MRI. We can offer surgical, medical, and radiation types of treatments. And even for men who require additional therapies, we're able to offer all that at a single site.
Get your PSA level tested by the experts. Kansas City Urology Care. At KCUC, you see the best in KC.
To make an appointment, visit appointments.kcuc.com. Inside the Huddle with Cody and Gold, each day from noon until 1 on 610 Sports Radio. Inside the Huddle is brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefit of blue on the official radio partner of the Kansas City Chiefs, 610 Sports Radio.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, this is Trent McDuffie, and you're listening to your home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
Okay, just a real quick lesson, and then we're going to get to corners. I got a text. Please text the text line, 913-586-7965. I'll see them. I'm reading them. But I got a text as we went to break that said, what that has to do with Chiefs football, with two question marks. So this person is extremely questioning my choices. And then the same texter said, how many running QBs win Super Bowls? Running QB is good fantasy land, QB fantasy land, not real football. And while those are some very pertinent points, texter, I was going to say maybe you're new here. That's not fair, though. You're probably not new here. I'm new here. And so I get that. I felt like I gave a warning right before that story spun off and talking about Arizona and Bears and Bison and Josh Allen and all of that. By the way, running quarterbacks can win Super Bowls. It's just very few quarterbacks win Super Bowls because Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes have existed in overlapping eras, so it's hard. Also, as a little bit of an aside, maybe responding to the same texter, if you don't think Josh Allen is QB2, I do not know what to tell you. I beg you to watch the games. Even after, look, hey, Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert had some moments last night. Also, some messes. Herbert looks good, man. I love Justin Herbert.
You know, to your point about Josh Allen being QB number two, which quarterback in the league do you fear more than Josh Allen?
Nobody. Outside of Mahomes? Nobody.
Nobody.
Nobody, dude. Not at all. And he's playing at a very high level. Hold on, I have to continue to yell at this texter. And no, I'm sorry, I'm not yelling. I'm not yelling. Our tone is going to be good here today. I'm new here. I'm in your space. I accept that. I gave you a little bit of the warning that we were going to go into some like mild nonsense, because if I don't do a little nonsense every once in a while, I'm diabetic. I'll die. Most people don't know this. If you have diabetes, if you don't keep your blood sugar in range and also have a little nonsense as a treat every once in a while, you'll die.
Really?
No. But I need this texter to know that they're threatening my life, or at least my happiness. I feel like I have been very good over the... Not. Let me finish the entire show. Someone says he definitely wasn't an AES fan. Correct. Thank you, texter. I think I've been very good, not in general, but it specifically in just like how chiefy this show has been in its first, whatever, four or five editions. I talk about Bison one time! One time, and that's too much for you? Anyway, I'm going to talk about the corners and stuff at some point, but like, just to warn you in advance, at some point, I'm going to talk about a video game, and I'm going to talk about it for too long. Like, the fourth minute of me trying to explain the game Bellatro to you is going to be bad radio. But I'm going to do it as a treat for me. Or else I'll die. The side effects of that can take anywhere between 1 and 100 years to fully set in. But every single person who has ever resisted the urge to lean into the nonsense has eventually perished. It's a true fact that I can't help you deal with right now, unfortunately. Don't sweat it, bud. I text in asking the host to compare the hotness of celebrities all the time. Thank you, texter. There's just a fragile balance of this ecosystem that leads us to creating the content that we do. you know, unfortunately now I've spent so much time talking about nonsense as a concept that I don't think we're going to have time to get to the corner issue. I'll give you a quick topic here just as a little football treat for those of you who, sorry, trying to satisfy every listener is like trying to beat the Turbo Tunnel in Battletoads. Text line's heating up. A little football treat for those of you who didn't want me to defend my animal conversation for the last couple of minutes. Kingsley Suamataia was a healthy scratch yesterday. For any team in football, if your week one starter and week two starter is a healthy scratch in week 11, that's a story. It's only even worse if that follows a trade up as a second round pick or as a guy who played last week and the injured starter who he replaced needed to come back in shortly thereafter because he couldn't do it anymore. And it's even worse when the guy who's active over you is a like legitimately nearly 7 foot tall alien from outer space who has it was an undrafted free agent who has just been a red shirt to this point this year. If I had to guess for what it's worth, Ethan Driscoll is he's like 6 foot eight or something. So I'm not quite seven. That dude is a giant. If push came to shove, I think Joe Tooney probably would have ended up playing left tackle before Ethan Driscoll did. Nate Taylor tweeted out during warmups that Driscoll was taking reps on the right side. So maybe it was like, if Juwan Taylor gets hurt, the Chiefs may have legitimately preferred right tackle Ethan Driscoll, where presumably he's been working throughout some of this season, over right tackle Kingsley, which is still damning. That's a rough one. But that would make some sense. And Andy Reid said today, you know, it's kind of needed to like, sometimes you got to take a step back to take two steps forward or whatever, one of those things. I'm not like here for saying, I'm not saying it's over for Kingsley big picture. It's way too early to say that. It's a really hard position to play as a rookie and as a young rookie at that. But they activated Ethan Driscoll, another young player, over Kingsley yesterday. Maybe Kingsley found out on Monday. Maybe it was like, hey bud, you just take your reps on the scout team and don't sweat Sunday. You're not going to have to face Von Miller. You're just going to settle in and review some tape or whatever. I have no idea. Maybe he found out yesterday that he was not going to be active at all. And maybe he was relieved. Maybe he was furious. I have no idea. The fact that we don't know what exactly is going on in that space is one of the reasons it's so fascinating and one of the reasons it's so concerning. I don't think he'll be a healthy scratch the rest of the season. I have to imagine that at some point they give him a roster spot back, but clearly they saw what happened to him against Denver. But well, we can't have that guy on the field in a game that matters. Sit him down, cool him off, and we'll try again in a little while. But that was a rough development to just make sure he stays out of the line of fire. Maybe if Kingsley was active and Wanya Morris got hurt, maybe it still would have been automatically Joe Tooney in that spot now. I don't know that for a fact. I'm just trying to figure out what it could have been that wasn't just Ethan Driscoll. And so maybe they thought, you know what, if it comes to that, we don't want to have to say that we played Tooney and Mike Caliendo at left tackle, left guard, instead of putting our second round pick rookie back there in a spot where he's played this year. I don't know, but it's a rough development, a rough evolution for Kingsley. Not the most important thing from here on out, but I'd keep my Donovan Smith contact ready to go. He's no savior. He and Wanya Morris are very comparable players right now, but he's probably a more professional left tackle than Ethan Driscoll at this point. And if you want to keep Joe Tooney at guard, keep him at guard. Last thing on that, if Joe Tooney's your best left tackle, I think Mitchell Schwartz tweeted this yesterday, that Joe Tooney has like always been the best left tackle on this team. If I'm not quoting him directly, I apologize, but I think that's what he was getting at. If Joe Tooney's your best left tackle and you got to play him at left tackle throughout the playoff run or whatever, I'm fine with that. It's a bit of a scramble. It's a bit of an adjustment. You want to play Wanya at guard? Does flipping them make your offensive line better? Probably not. But if Wanya gets hurt, do you figure it out with Tooney at left tackle and Caliendo at guard? Probably so. Got a text here that says, bring it on, Buffalo Bison Briscoe. I'm afraid that one might stick.
You're listening to The Josh Briscoe Show, Monday night starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
The Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. I am Joshua Briscoe. All right, we can talk about the defensive backs a little bit, although I like the text of sports is nonsense. We need a break from time to time. That's so true. And the more frequently we remember that sports is nonsense, I think the healthier of a relationship we can have with it. It's hard because sports is also my job. Like, caring and knowing about this football team in particular on a very deep level is my job. But sports, in a lot of ways, are nonsense. They're also important and bring people together, like much of the best nonsense does. So I think that's good. I think respecting that a lot of things in this world are nonsense, most of the great things in this world are nonsense, I think there's probably some truth to that. Let's talk about Nazi Johnson and Shamari Connor. Saw this tweet that summarized the Nazi Johnson coverage stats from yesterday. 12 targets, 9 receptions, 103 yards, 1 touchdown, 128.1 passer rating. It's not great. I mentioned Shamari Connor as well. He had a pick. He always has like one great tackle and one total whiff. He may have had a couple of whiffs yesterday. But they're related for me. I don't think Shamari Connor had as disastrous of a day as Nazi Johnson did. Nazi Johnson had like a let's revisit the plan kind of bad day. Connor, I think, is still probably the fifth best defensive back on this team. Unless Jaden Hicks keeps getting more work. I'm bullish on him, but that's probably more of a playoff and then 2025 kind of deal. But Nazi Johnson was bad and bad enough for Josh Allen to pick on. Which is kind of the one thing you just can't do. Just don't be such an obviously number two cornerback that's all the quarterback is looking for. Jalen Watson playing really good football, high level number two cornerback play before he broke his ankle. That was an enormous loss. We knew it was going to be, but I think there's one thing in the combination of it all that has led to it being an even bigger loss than I was giving it credit for. I'm still glad they didn't make that Godfather offer for Lattimore. I think that would have been pretty quickly regretted, short-term and long-term, frankly. But with Trent McDuffie, who had spent a decent amount of time in the slot through the first, whatever, 5-6 weeks of the season, first seven weeks, he was still in the slot plenty. Obviously, Trent McDuffie was an all-pro slot corner last year, but that's because L'Jarius Sneed was sort of their like number one corner, even though McDuffie was the best corner on this team last year, in my not-so-humble opinion. But McDuffie has to play outside now pretty frequently and follow the best weapon available most of the time. Not necessarily most of the time. You want to make sure that he's getting in a valuable matchup. I should at least say it that way. And you can usually get him one of those on the outside. The problem, in addition, is that if you ever want to put McDuffie in the slot now, your outside corners are probably both of Nazi Johnson and Joshua Williams, who was once again benched out of existence against the Bills. So I understand that McDuffie has to stay on the outside, which means that either Chris Roland Wallace, who's had a couple of rough goes, or Shamari Connor are probably going to end up being your slot coverage guy. I know I said this first part last week. The second part now is also worth watching. Last week, Shamari Connor played a career-high 33 snaps in the slot, according to Pro Football Focus's lineup charting. And then yesterday, he set a new career high with 44 snaps in the slot. Shamari Connor is a good and interesting football player, but I think maybe his worst thing right now is man coverage in the slot, which makes sense. That's hard as hell. The fact that McDuffie was so good at it, is the outlier. He's unbelievable there. Shamari Connor will not be going to a Pro Bowl based off that same, or getting an All-Pro nod based off that same distinction. And so if you want to get McDuffie back into the slot to try to solve that problem, you've created another problem on the outside. Here's what I'd wonder about. Can Nazi Johnson either figure out a way to stabilize and take a step that benefits this defense in some meaningful way? Or can Joshua Williams get another go out there? He looks lost in zone sometimes. He floats too deep when he doesn't need to, and then he leaves space underneath him, the flats in front of him. Or sometimes he floats not deep enough, or depending on where he's handing off a pass catcher. I understand that there can be some trust issues with Joshua Williams. But if you can make him play man coverage, he's your second best corner right now. I feel pretty good about that. In man coverage, Joshua Williams is your second best corner behind McDuffie. Maybe they feel like they have some more flexibility, some more versatility with Nazi Johnson. You don't have to tailor what you're doing to your weakest cornerback. I understand that, the value of that. But I think in this instance, I think it's worth taking that back to the drawing board. James, I have a quick question for you. Do I need to take another break, or will you bump me out for the last? We're in the last segment of the hour here. Love that. Thank you. I thought we needed to take one more. I looked at the clock and back at my notes. Wait a second. I think we're on time. I just couldn't believe we had this much time in the last segment. The thing that this connects to a little bit is that earlier today during his press conference, Andy Reid was, and this, he wasn't even asked about this. This was in the opening statement. You've got to make sure that you're sharp, whether it's assignments or execution, and we can do better in that area. We can do better as coaches of making sure our guys can be put in positions to do better and maybe to back off a little bit on certain things that we've been doing to help the players out so that they can play a little bit faster. Reed was aptly asked in a follow-up for an example of what it might mean for a coach to back off, or for coaches to back off, air quotes here. He said, maybe it's motions or shifts or that type of thing on the offensive side. Spags, I haven't gone through it with him yet, but they're little things, and sometimes little things add up. It's a confusing thing for Andy to say about the offense. Xavier Worthy's a rookie, and I'm sure he probably got lost somewhere. And DeAndre Hopkins is new, but he's certainly a veteran. The defensive side of the ball, I wonder if Andy Reid said that about backing off, about the simplifying. I wonder if he just said it before he had talked to Spags about it and he realized that he had just sort of given a talking point that he wasn't fully ready to unveil yet. Because I do think if you're having issues with Nazi Johnson or Joshua Williams or Shamari Connor or whoever it may be on that defensive side of the ball, simplifying it might make it a little bit easier for this defense to stay on track going forward. We're talking to Matt Verderam of SI.com coming up next here on the Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to the Josh Briscoe Show, Monday night starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
The Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. I am, in fact, Josh Briscoe. Big shout out to James Howell on the other side of the glass, producing the show and keeping me on track, and more importantly, on time, which is a Sisyphean task for anyone. Text line if you want to chime in, 913-586-7965. Saw Dan from KCK in there. What's up, Dan? Well, somebody asked if Andy said a similar thing last year after the Raiders game. You know, I haven't gone back to re-listen to that. It sounds familiar, though. That was interesting for Reed to volunteer that today because it does imply a little bit of, like, overexposure for some of these players, if it's the offense or the defense. But also, that's kind of how they tend to do things. So we'll dig into that and a lot of everything else with Matt Verderam of SI.com, that football show on KC Sports Network, the Matt Verderam Show on Patreon, and right now here with us on 96.5 The Fan. Matt, have you, like, had a break recently? Do you have, like, a day of the week that you just, like, go into a cocoon and don't work? Or is it 7 days a week during football season?
Yeah, no, it's 7 days. I mean, yeah, if I'm fortunate, like, kind of Saturday,
yeah,
because I like to stay married.
Yes.
But then it's like I always end up, you know, if I'm around the house, I turn on some – I almost just cursed on that. I turn on some game that I don't care about.
Yep.
And, you know, it's like, oh, look, Kentucky and Vanderbilt. And I'm like, why am I doing this?
I don't know.
So, yeah. try to be, you know, Saturdays, occasionally Friday, I try to make that somewhat of a weekend, but I always end up writing or, you know, watching film or something.
It's impossible not to. My thing that I caught myself doing on Saturday was to take a little bit of a break from all the football and everything, you know, because we're just so completely surrounded by football 24/7. I went ahead and on one TV, I put up a YouTube TV quad box of all the college football games while I played college football 25 on the big TV. And that was a really nice break for me. I got to really decompress.
Yeah, it's that's about the closest you're going to get, you know, from getting away. I love the Knicks. I don't think I've been able to watch a full Knicks game because there's always something to do.
Yes.
So, which is annoying. Like right now, we're sitting, I'm talking to you, the Knicks are up by like 30.
It's a blow. You don't even need to stress it.
You know, so it's like, but that's true. I don't need to stress it. Well, the Wizards will do that. but no, you know, it's, I kind of look at it like I will work really, really, really hard now because, you know, in the football world, I basically have the schedule of a teacher.
Yeah, sure.
Like I get, you know, 2.5-3 months off in the summer or, you know, late spring, summer. So I don't mind it as much. Now, if Sports Illustrated starts tasking me with writing things in June, there's going to be a mutiny.
Okay, good. Well, let me tell you this. Don't come over to my side because we will be writing in June. But, you know, we can plan that out and try to make that work for all of us, which we're able to do. And it is a fun time of year. Yesterday, there was great football all around. I was going to start with Chiefs-specific things, but let's go non-Chiefs at the front end. What did you learn yesterday outside of Chiefs-Bills about the NFL? Was there a team? I mean, I don't know if the Bengals season ended. I don't know if the Chargers or Broncos proved to you that there's some legitimacy there. What did you learn yesterday outside of Chiefs-Bills?
So, look, I didn't like the Lions won by a million points, but I didn't learn anything. Jacksonville's terrible, and Detroit's really good. Like, that was not.
Yeah.
I would say that I gotta say I respect Denver a lot more than I thought I was going to at any point this season.
Me too.
They're not winning the Super Bowl, but they're real enough that if they got the wrong, you know, like the right team on the wrong weekend, they can. Atlanta's not a bad team. They annihilated Atlanta.
Yeah.
That's a real win, you know? And, like, the Chiefs game, look, the Chiefs should have won that game by, you know, a little bit more of a comfortable margin if Mahomes didn't throw Worthy into like, Indiana on that one deep ball. But, you know, look, I think they're real. I'll tell you what I learned the other side of it. The Ravens I have no belief in the Ravens. I just don't. I know they score a lot of points they did on Sunday. But every time Baltimore plays a team that can play defense, the same script plays out. And this has gone on for years now. Yeah. If you can stop them from running the ball effectively and they have to rely on just throwing the ball, they usually lose. And in that game, you know, Pittsburgh did a decent job against Henry. And the Ravens, I don't know what's going on with Tucker. He can't hit a field goal.
Huh.
I mean, too wide. And I think he's 16 at 22 on the year or something like that. I mean, it's been awful. So they have three turnovers, two missed field goals. So I learned, and then, the Bengals, I have been the guy who's like, don't sleep on the Bengals. Yep. They're going to turn it around. Yeah, they're not turning it around. Mm. That loss, you watch that game, you're like, this is, had they have won that game, if they had come back and won that thing, I would be the first guy, oh my, that's the turning point.
Yeah.
But then McPherson misses two kicks, and the Bengals gave up 84 yards on four plays in like 30 seconds. I'm like, all right, I'm done. That team's not running today.
It's so funny, though, and it's so NFL football to say, oh, you know, if old Money Mac could have hit a couple of kicks, the rest of the, you know, obviously the Chargers going down and scoring at the end, whatever, you just the yards and however many seconds, butterfly effect, who knows where that ends up. If he hits those kicks, that feels like that's probably a Bengals win and the season's still alive. And I was with you. You said that on this show whenever you were on a few weeks ago. Like, that's the team the Chiefs shouldn't want to see. And watching them last night, I get it. Like, Joe Burrow's playing some excellent football. T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase are incredible. Lou Anarumo with, like, you, me, and James behind the glass playing three of those 11 defensive spots. Lou Anarumo is still a good defensive coordinator. He's just making he's cooking with the, you know, the Walmart great value aisle at this point. So they could have been frisky in a way that I'm glad we might just get to avoid, honestly.
Yeah, look, I mean, Burrow's having an unbelievable season.
Yeah.
And they can't win a game. I'll put the Bengals to bed in this way, and you ruminate on this, see what you think.
Okay.
You know what I think their best path forward is after this season? Making Ja'Marr Chase their Tyreek Hill trade.
Ooh!
That team needs to trade Ja'Marr Chase, go get a bunch of picks, and hit on them and build that defense. And let Burrow elevate the guys around them.
I kind of like that, Matt. That's kind of fun. They could decide if they want to pay Higgins then. Ishivash right, seems like right. I mean, maybe it's just that the Bengals always have a third receiver that is like always there to,
you know,
like, he's interesting and he's an elevatable guy. Is what I would say. His floor is high enough that yes, he can be Joe Burrow's best friend.
Go fix your defense and then look in the if you fix enough of the defense because you saved some cap space and got a couple guys in free agency. Go draft Luther Burden in the first round.
Sure, absolutely.
There you go. There's for 5 years. There you go. Like I just. They're not going to fix this by signing Ja'Marr Chase to make him the richest receiver of all time. And then it's like Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow, if you can combine them, are going to be that meme of Will Smith looking around the room.
Yes.
Like, there's no one else there. The team's terrible. Like, they can't stop anybody. The line's not good. The running backs are fine, but they're not, you know, you're not, you don't have Bijan Robinson back there. Like, you need to fix the rest of the roster. And Chase is the ticket to doing that, but I don't know if they'll do it.
I'll tell you what, the one thing, my instinct is to say, no, of course they won't, because NFL teams never do that. The Chiefs, the right. fact that the Chiefs did that is obviously the outlier.
They literally set up the dynasty. That is what, them trading Tyreek Hill set up their current dynasty.
And here's the one thing that I wonder about. If you could get this into the ear of ownership, this specific ownership, they might like not
have to pay him.
They might like not having to put a whole bunch of money in escrow for Ja'Marr Chase. That
correct.
That might actually play for them in a way that wouldn't play for owners who care more about the perception.
Yes. No, I think for them, like that's the path forward. It is. But you know, and look, we've seen other teams like in recent years, like the Bills reshape their roster. I'd argue the Bills are a better team this year than they were a year ago.
Yeah,
they may not be as name brand talented, they're better.
Yep.
They're a better team. They fit together better. The Chargers got rid of Mike Williams and Keenan Allen and Austin Eckler, and they're 7-3 because they got a coach.
Yep.
And they rebuilt that defense with some younger pieces who are flourishing, like Cam Hart, like Thule inside. That's okay. Like, I think sometimes people get so addicted to the fantasy football version of the NFL. Like, mm-hmm. You got to have two receivers. You got to have right. No, you don't. You got to win in the trenches. You've got to be able to rush the passer and protect your quarterback. You've got to have a great quarterback, and you've got to have a great coach. And that's not easy.
No.
But the closer you are to that ideal world, the better you are as a championship contender. And if you have three of those four things, you're in good shape. Two of those four, you got an outside shot. Like, it doesn't – look at the Bengals are the quintessential example. They have – two megastar receivers, doesn't matter, the 4-7. Yeah. Can't do anything. And both of them are having great years, by the way.
Yeah.
And it makes no difference because they can't stop anybody. They can't protect. I don't know that the coach is a great coach. Like, and here you are, sitting at 4-7 and on the brink of elimination.
It's also another reason. I know other sports have their version of this, but the NFL, even in the team building and in the construction side of it all, the NFL is my favorite thing in the world to talk about the hypotheticals of, or the way that you got here from point A to point B, because you can draft your quarterback, and if you get CJ Stroud, you're going to have some time of, you know, some level of a very high level quarterback play for very little money, but then eventually you got to pay Patrick Mahomes. Then you have Tyreek Hill. Who you prioritize and try to stay under the cap, I think, just creates fascinating drama at every turn. And to your point, let's go to the Bills, a team that I also thought there was going to be a little bit of a reload this year. I thought they'd be a playoff team. I didn't know how the East was going to shake out. Obviously, everyone else in the East has underachieved, even the Patriots, who had nothing to achieve. It's all been bad, certainly the Dolphins and Jets. But this Bills team is obviously legitimate. What did you learn about Buffalo yesterday? And then we're going to spend the rest of the segment on the Chiefs.
Without trying to be a cold water guy, I don't think I learned anything.
I get it. Totally.
Like, I said this on my own podcast this week. I said this on a million radio shows last week. Like, I don't, unless there's a big injury coming out of the game, which there was not, that's the only way that would change my perception of either one of these two teams. Like, I know they're both really good. Mm-hmm. It's not like like that game, I know Buffalo won by 9, but like that game was nip and tuck the entire way.
Totally.
Like there was never a point where you're like, oh, that game's over until Allen ran in like 2 minutes left.
Yep.
I think the Bills are what I thought they were, to quote Denny Green, right? Like they're a really good team. They're only going to get healthier, you would think, although you never know. Sometimes some guys go off, guys go down. But they're really talented. And Allen, Allen even had an Allen moment in that game where he threw a pick. You're like, what is he doing? Mm-hmm. Although I think he just thought Knox was going to keep running and Knox stopped.
Right.
But, look, the Bills have nothing to prove to me until January.
Yeah.
Like, I know they're good. I know they're capable of winning 13, 14 games. I know Allen's an MVP candidate every year. I know that McDermott in that spot can coach to win that game. My question is, if you're in the AFC Championship game and you're facing the Chiefs and Mahomes is in one of those, like, I'm going to just go for your throat game where he's just mm-hmm. out of his mind, can you handle that? Or do you run a fake punt from your own 30?
Right.
That's never going to – I saw – somebody asked me this morning on a different show, like, is this a changing of the guard moment? I'm like, it's week 11.
In November. Like, Matt, is this a changing of the guard in November?
The Chiefs, look, guys, I'm going to let everybody who's listening, I'm going to let you know the secret. The Chiefs absolutely want to win that game. They know it would have made their lives easier. But here's the other truth of it. They don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care. They got on that plane and were like, that's fine. They firmly believe if they see him in January, they'll beat him. Because they always beat him. Like, that game, I think if they're smart, it illuminates some deficiencies the Chiefs have and have had all year long, but it shows up against better teams. But the Chiefs aren't going back to the one-hour drive going, I don't know how we're going to beat those guys. I don't know. Like they don't feel like that. They're going to work to get ready for Carolina.
The team did not go home discouraged. I bet Nazi Johnson did. I think Joe Colan might be having a worse week at the office than some of the other guys. But I think that's absolutely right, man. Mahomes seemed like legitimately bothered after the game. This is super anecdotal, but Andy Reid did his post game press conference last night, and then he had his mid Monday presser as well. And it's I will say this. Andy Reid has been in a worse mood after wins this year than he was in any either of those pressers. The one seed matters. Holding that number one spot in the AFC absolutely does matter. But to your point, I never got the feeling that the Chiefs again drove home in silence, beating themselves up because they think that they just ran into flew home in silence because they just realized that they got beat by a team that has their number. They've done exactly this in the regular season before, and then it's gone the other way in the playoffs. No one should be making any grand sweeping changes in their power rankings or in the changing of the guard off that game.
No, and people will, and that'll set everybody up to look like a dope in January.
Right,
that's what will happen. Yeah. Look, on my show on Patreon yesterday, not to be a self-aggrandizing clown.
Please, be nobody's better being a self-aggrandizing clown than you and me.
Yeah, that's true. On the old Matt Verderam show on Patreon, look, I did a show this morning, last night, and basically tried to break the game. I was trying to give a way to, like, break the game down that wasn't just like, here's what happened. Mm-hmm. And I kind of came up with the idea of, like, here's, like, this is what matters from this game, and this is what does not matter.
Yep.
And for me, coming out of that night, what matters, Nazi Johnson just cannot be your second corner. He just can't. I'm sorry. I don't care if it's Roland Wallace. I don't care if you go to Williams and say, look, man, like, you've played good football here before. You're just going to have to figure it out. Like, I'll say one thing for Williams. He athletically is a freak show.
Yes.
Like, there are times that guy is going to be in man coverage and win because he's just a freak athletically.
Yes.
You have to play him over Najee Johnson. I'm sorry. He's not great, maybe. He's better than Najee Johnson. Number two, you mentioned it with Colin. That pass rush has got to wake up. Yeah. And I couldn't have been more wrong. This is my big sweeping like hot take was they'll lead the league in sacks this year. No, they won't. Oh. Chris Jones has 3 sacks, and he's played great. But like you got to finish some of these sacks. I'm sure he would tell you that. Karlaftis has been very up and down. He's had some good games. At some games, he's nowhere to be found. Now they're getting the Menahou back. That's going to help. But like Mike Dana, man, they paid you $24 million. You got to show up. Like you got to be a factor in these games. Anadike Uzomah, buddy, like put up a shut up time. And then the one thing I just don't understand at the Chiefs, and they've done this some like similar stuff like this in the past. So Uche, they traded for him with the express purpose of like, hey, third and long. The Bills were in third and long, it felt like, during the national anthem.
Yes,
they were in
all
third
day.
All and he, never, he played like five snaps.
Literally five snaps. He's played 25 defensive snaps in three games. He's a half-year rental. Like, look, man, if he plays 25 snaps per game in December and January and throughout the playoffs, then that
right,
trade's
then
fine.
Fine.
But man, that's the first thing I talked about today is just like
it was ridiculous.
The snap counts there altogether. Look, man, if Mike Dana is still like playing through something, let him rest.
Put him on IR for 4 weeks. Like, get somebody out there who can rush the court. Like, that is why that guy's, and he's good. He's a good player.
Yes.
Like, put him on the field and let him play. And then the third one, which is the uncomfortable one that I get screamed at for all the time from Chiefs fans, and I don't care. They're wrong. Mahomes has just got to play better.
Yeah.
Period. Look, anybody who's been a Chiefs fan loves Mahomes and will always love him, and they should. But it's okay to say, listen, two things are true at once. Xavier Worthy's got to learn how wide the field is.
Yes.
But also, like, that throw was atrocious.
Yeah.
That was a bad throw. That ball was to the outside. There was nobody on the inside, the field side of Worthy. That ball should be thrown with more touch, more air, toward the middle of the field. That is a walk-in touchdown.
Yeah.
And the same thing happened against Denver. I was at the Tampa Bay game. He basically threw the ball right out where I was sitting. Like, that ball, again, got to be caught. It's got to be in bounds. It was a bad throw. Yeah. Like, Patrick Mahomes, he's got to be the first interception. The second one, forget. Like, he's playing. Okay, they're trying to force it.
Sure.
You can't throw that first interception.
Second play of the game.
It's ridiculous. Take the sack. Throw it in the ground. Who cares? Like, if anyone out there who's listening who's played football knows this is true, you are taught at the high school level you cannot go high and late over the middle of the field, ever. That is the cardinal sin of quarterbacking. That ball, he's like twisting down, throws. Why? Like, what do you do? It's a ridiculous throw. Mahomes had some great moments in that game, but he's Patrick Mahomes. And the other thing, lastly, quickly, their scheme is ridiculous right now. Like, there are 34 quarterbacks who qualify for average depth of target. He is 34th in the league. It's insane. They've turned him into Tyrod Taylor. Like, throw the ball. It's ridiculous. Throw it. His first read should always be a minimum of 10 to 12 yards downfield. Always. And if it's on him and he's just checking it down, they've got to work that out of him, because they have turned him into like Alex Smith light with the mentality that just everything's got to be 5 yards.
Yeah,
they have talent this year. This isn't a year ago where you looked at them and went, oh, what is he supposed to do? Like,
DeAndre Hopkins is on this team.
They have DeAndre Hopkins. I got news for people. Zay Jordy's not bad.
No,
he's not. Like, that kid, if Mahomes could hit him in stride, he'd have about 10 touchdowns this year.
Yeah.
They have him. They have Hopkins. Watson and Hardman, his ancillary pieces, are fine. You have Kelsey. You have Gray. This idea that, like, they just can't stretch the field. I watched the Chargers stretch the field with Will Disley last night. Like, there's no excuse for this team to just, every play's got to be 3 yards, and then hopefully a guy misses. It's insane. Throw the football.
And Worthy is the guy for that, man, that you got there before I got to even, you know, give you my little add-on. His last target was the throw to the sideline. And I could not be more with you. Worthy needs to be able to get his feet in bounds. He needs to know where the sideline is. That is going to be a real thing that's either going to make him look a lot better or a lot worse for the rest of his NFL career. But also, he's like 14 years old, and he's been in the NFL for 20 minutes. I'm willing to say there's a lot of moving parts for him. Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes. I mean, and he said it after the game. He knows this, too. He needed to make a better throw there for the, at minimum, second, in some way, third time just to Worthy this year.
Listen. I equate it to like Michael Jordan missing two free throws.
Yeah.
You know, if I don't know, I'm trying to get some random NBA player. If like Landry Shamet rolls up to the free throw line.
Shocker legend.
And misses two free throws. He's on the Knicks. If he misses two free throws, I'm like, okay. I mean, whatever. If if Michael Jordan misses two free throws, you're like, what the hell just happened?
You like call your parents to make sure, like, just check in.
Is Jordan all right? Does he have money on the other side? Like, what the hell happened? I mean, Mahomes, I know people look at that and go, oh, it's a 50-yard throw. That is a layup for Mahomes.
Yeah.
It is you know, it's one thing if some guy's on Worthy's back.
Totally.
Okay, fine. He's wide open.
He was closer to the staff on the sideline than he was to another Bills defender.
That boy, he's wide open. Put some air under it. I mean, it's just – and look, if it was one time, I'd be, hey, man, what are you going to do? It happens. He has missed Worthy down the field repeatedly. He keeps throwing the ball out of bounds.
Yeah.
And it's just got – like, he is – now, I will say this. I will add on this part of it. I also could absolutely see Mahomes doing this all year and getting to the playoffs and then just annihilating three teams and they win the Super Bowl. Like, he is 100% capable of it, and I expect him to come out of it. But at some point, it's not wrong to say, hey, he's the best player in the world, and he's got to be held to a higher standard than most other players. That's it. Like, that's what, you know, if Daniel Jones makes that throw, I'm like, hey, good for him. He got it near him.
Right.
Like, good on Daniel Jones. If Josh Allen, like Josh Allen actually did miss a throw to his backup tight end down the field mm-hmm. in the game. It was in like the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, like, wow, like that was an awful throw. How did that? If Josh Allen misses that throw, I'm really surprised by it. If Russell Wilson does it, I'm like, all right, well, fine.
Right.
I mean, Mahomes has to be the driving, multiplying force on this team. He just has to be.
Last thing, we're obliterating the breaks. Sorry in advance, James. Give me your one, just like I'm checking in on what you are currently seeing or believing from Travis Kelce, who was the third leading tight end receiver for the Chiefs yesterday.
I think he's fine. I think he's been really good for the last month and a half. Like, the Bills made – that is the one thing in this game that I can guarantee you if they see them again. Everybody's going to talk about, like, oh, you know, they held him to two catches and 8 yards. How much you want to bet if they see them in the playoffs? He goes for about 120 yards.
Yeah, I think you're right.
They will go to school on what was being done, and they'll fix it. But no, like, listen, Kelsey's going to end up with like 900 to 1,000 yards. It's fine.
Matt, you're the best. I appreciate you getting in here and then making this happen on so many levels, unlike the Chiefs offense. We'll chat again soon.
You got it. Anytime.
Matt Verderam of Sports Illustrated, SI.com, that football show on KC Sports Network, the Matt Verderam Show on Patreon. That's all about the Chiefs over there. Go check it out. You can also follow him on social at Matt Verderam. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to spell his last name in case it's the first time you're hearing. Although he's, of course, been on this show and on the station before. V-E-R-D-E-R-A-M-E. Google his name and you'll find all of his work across the internet. We'll take a timeout. We're overdue for one, but I want to talk about Xavier Worthy yet because I haven't gotten to do that yet, and Matt just did it, and it made me jealous. On the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to the Josh Briscoe Show, Monday night starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
So the Josh Briscoe Show here, about half an hour more on 96.5 The Fan. Appreciate Matt Verderam of all of his outlets, SI.com, KCSN, The Matt Verderam Show on Patreon. All great ways to learn more about the entirety of the NFL, and of course, he always has a Chiefs focus with us here. I just think Matt's great. He also makes great radio. You can tell. But it's the tone of his voice, the content of it all, to the delivery. The man is a professional sports talk radio guest. Now I'm going to talk about Xavier Worthy. I will say, it's okay that this is a short segment, because Matt pretty much led where I was headed. Unlike Patrick Mahomes to Xavier Worthy. Hello! It's not the worst throw I've ever seen, by any means. The one last week was just on Mahomes. That ball was uncatchable. Maybe the wind caught it, whatever. But last week, against Denver, that was a uncatchable football, and Xavier Worthy should have had basically a walk-in touchdown. 2 weeks ago, Xavier Worthy should have had basically a walk-in touchdown on what I think was probably 70% on Worthy and 30% on Mahomes. Yesterday, I'm going like 60-40 Pat, I think. And look, part of this, as we just talked about, part of it's adjusting for the person. If Patrick Mahomes misses a pass that Daniel Jones misses, you're way more bent out of shape about Patrick Mahomes missing it because he's Patrick Mahomes. In this instance, you have a rookie who has had this exact issue on the sidelines two of these recent weeks. One, again, the quarterback's fault. One, I would say more worthies. But this has been a recurring issue now, and you kind of throw him into another real test in the third instance of it happening. If you can make life easier on your pass catchers, you should. That's the gist of it. And again, Mahomes said this post-game last night. So I don't feel like I'm saying anything controversial. I'm not saying anything that Mahomes himself didn't say. If that's a better football, it's a touchdown. And I think that's the third consecutive time that that is true. If it's a better football, it's a touchdown. Xavier Worthy didn't drop an MVS touchdown, right? It wasn't that he couldn't track the football or that it went through his hands or that he couldn't come back and make a play on the ball. He had one great catch through the contact yesterday, but he had an entire drive that was dedicated to him, and Worthy looked great there. So the two-prong thing for me is, one, it does need to be a better throw from Mahomes, and that's okay. Mahomes himself said it, but it's weird that this happened three times now with the same connection. I can't feel too bad about pointing at this recurring issue that Mahomes is also acknowledging and say, yeah, no, I mean, this is a group effort. You need that back in the offense. You need to be able to stretch the field. Here's the second thing, real quick. That missed connection was Xavier Worthy's last target of the game. He didn't get another touch. There's no little design run, no little screen and see what you can do, no more deep shots. I don't know. And I don't really want to get in the whole like offensive coordinator discussion, because I think some people have really kind of lost the plot. I'm like, this is all Matt Nagy's fault. Not really. Maybe it's a little bit Matt Nagy's fault, and it's a little bit Andy Reid's fault, and a little bit Patrick Mahomes' fault, and a little bit Xavier Worthy's fault, and a little bit my fault somehow. I don't know. There's plenty of blame to go around. But Xavier Worthy gave you the best thing your offense had yesterday, and you didn't go back to him. And I don't think that was like a conscious choice of like, oh, he couldn't haul in that pass on the sideline. We can't go back to him anymore. It's just how it went. Xavier Worthy is not a mandatory part of the flow of the offense, I guess, at this point. I can't live that way anymore. This offense needs to have some verticality. And we talked about at the very beginning of the show, it needs some wide receivers who can separate against man. Xavier Worthy is your answer to both of those questions. So can we get him the football, please? No? Okay, never mind. I guess I'll just stop asking. It's the Josh Briscoe Show, 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to The Josh Briscoe Show, Monday nights starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
Do you know the Chiefs signed a wide receiver today? Not officially yet, actually. It sounds, the reports are that they will be signing a player who was drafted very, very close to another player who's not currently playing. Sorry that was so weirdly vague. It's the Josh Briscoe Show here on 96.5 The Fan. A couple of days ago, the Patriots released wide receiver Tyquan Thornton, a speedster out of Baylor, ran a 4.28 40 at the combine, if memory serves, and he was drafted 50th overall. There you go, 4.28 is what I can run a 40 in. He ran a 4.28 40 at the 22 NFL Combine. The Patriots waived him or released him a couple of days ago. Actually, it's after the deadlines, maybe not. I can't remember. None of that's important. What is important is that Thornton went on through the process, and today, according to Ian Rappaport, he agreed to join the Chiefs practice squad. It's kind of funny because, for, like, background here, he played 28 games in New England, 39 catches, 385 yards. Most of that came in his first season there. He was drafted 50th overall in the 2022 NFL draft. At 52, George Pickens. 53, Alec Pierce. 54, Sky Moore. So look, I mean, you guys thought maybe the Chiefs would try to go trade for George Pickens, right? You got a different receiver from that same cluster in the 2022 draft. The Chiefs were never trading for George Pickens, nor were they ever drafting him, for what that's worth. The mold here is perfect. This is extremely Brett Veachy. This is a fast player they probably liked with a lower round grade in 2022. He's got straight ahead speed. He doesn't have a very diverse route tree. And look, let me be clear on this, talking about this player in the midst of a, you know, three-peat push here. My guess is that Tyquan Thornton probably doesn't suit up for the Chiefs in a regular season game this year. Would be my hunch at this point. This is a long-term move for him and for the Chiefs, which I think makes a lot of sense. It's also worth noting the New England Patriots, who have been desperate for wide receiver help for a while, decided this is the guy we're going to let go. I think they were either activating Barmore or something. I can't remember what the Patriots' corresponding move was, but they needed to make a move, and they said, no, we're going to go ahead and let this 2022 second-round pick go. He is literally the equivalent of if the Chiefs cut Sky Moore, the Patriots picked him up, and then on a night show on a Monday in New England, you had a host going, you know, didn't he catch a touchdown in the Super Bowl or something? Did he get a corn dog, or is that Kadarius Toney? Where's Kadarius Toney? Oh, the Browns, huh? So I don't want to just go off his scouting report or off the fact that he was a second-round pick when he probably should have been a third or a fourth-round pick, but a raw, fast receiver is now, I'd imagine, going to spend the rest of this season on the Chiefs practice squad, learning the playbook, getting familiar with everything in there in Andy Reid's offense, and then he will have a head start for training camp of 2025. That's my expectation right now, and I'd be thrilled with that. He should be thrilled with that. Instead of next year, it's Justin Ross, Nico Remigio, another round of Cornell Powell, Montrell Washington. Who, pick your favorite. It doesn't really matter. One of those guys sometimes will get a regular season chance. Most of them don't. It's just the nature of the beast. I'll be interested, you know, around the start of training camp, if this is in fact the way that it goes, I'll be down to sit around and say, hey, you know what? Tyquan Thornton. Yeah, you know, I see the tools. I see the speed here, and the Chiefs always feel like a team that could use a little bit more speed. He has had issues holding on to the football. I mean, there are plenty of reasons that he was available, but I think it's a little bit interesting, and I wanted to at least acknowledge it here. Although, no, probably not as relevant to the Chiefs' Super Bowl chances this year as all of the players who played against the Bills. But he might be more relevant to that chance than Sky Moore is. So, I mean, if you're looking at the 2022 draft, why was that? Why did I be so mean towards Sky Moore? No, I mean, because he's not very good. But I was mean again! I'd like to apologize to Sky Moore and the Moore family. He's very nice. Talk to him in a... at the Marquez Valdez Scantling charity softball game that is no longer named that a couple years ago. Sky Moore was very nice. I wish him nothing but the best. I hope he's recovering nicely from his mysterious abdomen core muscle injury. Would love to see him also out there at training camp next year, having a better camp than he did this season. We got to just end the segment, man. I've been trying to say a nice thing about Sky Moore so I don't feel like a jerk, and I can't. He's got one of the coolest names in football. There we go. Boom. Josh Briscoe Show. Over.
You're listening to the Josh Briscoe Show. Monday night starting at 7 on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5. The Fan.
One more segment of tonight's edition of the Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5. The Fan. Your home for Kansas City sports. I am the aforementioned Josh Briscoe, obviously, at this point. James Howell on the other side of the glass. Both of us need to talk about a football thing that is not directly related to the Kansas City Chiefs, and I'm going to let James go first because he also needs to make sure the show ends when it's supposed to, and I cannot be trusted with that information, as I have clearly proven before. James, what is your football achievement, your core memory, the thing that you want to celebrate with us all here tonight?
Well, see, while everyone was kind of a little down because the Chiefs lost to Buffalo, I wasn't fazed at all. I have an 8-year-old son, and he plays on a flag football team that I help coach. And we went and we played, and this is the Kansas City Chiefs Flag Football League. It's the one sponsored by the Chiefs.
Oh, okay. Right? I didn't know that.
And so... this last weekend, we had our Super Bowl game, and strong Chiefs came out victorious.
Let's go!
14-13. So, big accomplishment for them. If any of the kids are listening, I'm super, super proud of you guys. And huge, big shout out to Coach Strong. The head coach.
Well, his name is Coach Strong.
His name is...
That's why they're the Strong Chiefs?
They're the Strong Chiefs.
Buddy, that's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, I got to shout out Centrell Strong.
Do it.
And Tyrone Johnson.
Do it.
And, you know, all the parents that were, you know, crucial to the success, cheering these little guys on. It was an unbelievable season, and I just, I mean, nothing could bum me out.
That is legitimately so sweet. And 8-year-old flag football feels like probably a real sweet spot of football and chaos. And yeah. that to me feels good. I might just, but it, well, let me ask you this, James, because you've been there and you have an eight-year-old son. I was gonna say maybe I should just come by and just watch like some 8-year-old flag football.
Yeah.
Well, but should I?
Wait, look,
if I
kids...
show up as a single child, not single maritally, my wife is not coming with me to this. If I show up as a lone, childless adult watching 8-year-olds play flag football, is someone calling some sort of authority figure to interview me about why I'm there? It's an inappropriate age to be scouting at. It's weird to just show up at a kid's game without a kid, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe, like, if you were invited.
I might ask you for an invite next season.
Yeah, if you were invited and you met up with me and was like, yeah, you know, I'm here to support. But just randomly, man, I might shy away from those kind of activities.
Other end of the spectrum. If I show up with binoculars and like a notebook and a polo, maybe a whistle. If I tell you what, if I wear a polo with just like an NFL logo or a Big 12 logo, I feel like I might be able to spin this into a positive.
Yeah.
But I probably won't. We'll probably just let the kids celebrate in peace.
Yeah, it might raise a few eyebrows.
It should. Understandably, it would raise a few eyebrows. I would have no issue with the eyebrows that it raised. This is not exactly the same level of competition or accomplishment, frankly, because we are not in Titletown situation yet. But I am an alum of Mid-American Nazarene University in Olathe, Kansas, and MNU has returned to the NAIA playoffs, leapfrogged Baker, bleep Baker. I don't really have that in my heart. It's just sort of, it was the rivalry they told us that we should have. So bleep number 12 Baker. MNU gets the first round bye in the NAIA playoffs. They went 9-1 this regular season, and the Pioneers are here for playoff action. I don't know when these games are yet or where I need to be to witness them or how that's going to go, but if I can't show up at a random 8-year-old flag football game, you can bet your bottom dollar I'm going to figure out where I need to be to watch the Pioneers make a run. No championship guaranteed. The strong Chiefs flag football team, they got a ring. MNU still has to prove that. But a shout out to the Pioneers for going back to the playoffs and generally just an incredible, incredible season for them. Feels weird to go from that back in the Chiefs talk, but I did have like one more serious Chiefs thing. We could talk about Buffaloes again, or Bison, I suppose. Here's my one. You know what? I'll do this and then pivot to a look ahead for the Carolina Panthers coming up on Sunday. Guys, gals, anybody's, hope you're sitting down. I think the Chiefs are going to beat the Panthers. I don't want to seem overly confident. I don't want to put a target on the Chiefs' back. But I do think they will beat the Carolina Panthers. I believe it pretty strongly and pretty confidently. But one thing that I would love to see, you're getting a little bit of a JV squad kind of game here. And that it is still an NFL football game. It is still NFL players, even if the quarterback is like kind of a sticks out like a bit of a sore thumb at this point. Although I don't know how they were on bye last week, right? So I don't know what he looked like 2 weeks ago. I can't remember at this point. But there are professional football players over there, and they're not going to just take kindly to getting dunked on for 60 minutes. And I don't frankly think the Chiefs are in a position to just be dunking on anybody. I just don't think they're going to do that. Here's what I would love to see, and it's something we didn't see from the Chiefs that we did see from the Bills yesterday. We have talked a lot about the Chiefs' offense being consistent and being successful, particularly the running game. The running game has had a very high success rate and a very low explosive rate. Maybe we'll see Isaiah Pacheco back. I would guess that we're a week out on Charles Omenihu still, just by the nature of the injuries, but I'm guessing. What I would love to see against Carolina, and then against the Raiders, and then against everybody the rest of the way, truthfully, but an opportunity to show something against Carolina. Let's see some explosives. This will not prove that you can do it against Buffalo in the playoffs, or this won't prove that you can do it against better defenses in general, but let's see some explosives. Ideally, let's see these deep shots to Xavier Worthy come together. We've seen it at a couple of times. We've seen him have explosive plays. We've seen touchdowns. We've seen shots down the field. We've seen busted coverages turn into six. We've seen him make tough catches now in traffic. I would love for Xavier Worthy to, for, and for the Chiefs, frankly, for the coaching staff to say, bleep the growing pains. This is an opportunity. I don't care if Patrick Mahomes puts three of these out of bounds and Xavier Worthy drops one. Give me six. I don't think they're going to throw six of those deep shots. But do it until it works, and do it until you can build a little more confidence and a little more chemistry in that relationship. Is it Worthy breaking out to the sidelines, needing to drag his feet in? Fine. Good, in fact. Make Xavier Worthy drag his toes against Carolina. Make Patrick Mahomes hit those shots. But to loosen up the offense a little bit that way and to find those explosive plays the Chiefs could not buy yesterday, and it felt like the Bills were creating, not quite at will, but too frequently, that led to them putting up 30 on the Chiefs, a Chiefs defense that had not given up 30 points since February of 2023 against the Philadelphia Eagles. How unbelievable is that? I think the Chiefs defense will be okay. I'm worried about Nazi Johnson. I'm worried about the pass rush. We've talked about it all here tonight on the Josh Briscoe Show. You can get the podcast online if you missed any of it. Shout out to Matt Verderam of SI for joining us as our guest. And a big shout out to James Howell, flag football championship coach on the other side of the glass. I'm Joshua Briscoe. This has been the Josh Briscoe Show on 96.5 The Fan. Bye, Mom.